Hello, and welcome to the second episode of the Trinity Fianna Fáil podcast. I'm your host, Harry O'Brien. In this episode, I sit down with Tom O'Connell. Tom is the Uachtaráin of Fianna Fáil Ógra and is based out of Galway. He's a farmer and school teacher, and in this episode, we chat about Fianna Fáil, of course, growing up in Galway, the new budget, and many other things. So sit back and enjoy.
All right, so you're a farmer, Tom, if I'm correct, a beef farmer. Yep. And Fianna Fáil has always had a strong base of farmers. Why do you think that is, in your own view?
I think Fianna Fáil's base was always with the smaller farmers. So I think it's more broadly Fianna Fáil's thing that they always looked after, I suppose, the less well-off people. And I suppose the smaller farmers always had to work off farm to supplement their income, or if they couldn't get work, I suppose we're trying to survive on a farm income, which I think, as everyone knows at this stage, is just not viable. And so I think they always found with Fianna Fáil someone that cared for them or someone that wanted to look after them. Now, in saying that, no one in my own family supported Fianna Fáil until I got involved with it. But I know around a lot of the smaller farmers would be Fianna Fáil people. But of course, I didn't know that until I actually got involved and started meeting with them. But I do think it's just Fianna Fáil and their focus, I suppose, on the smaller and family farms. I think that term was used quite a lot in the 16 and 2020 general elections, that, you know, if we can sustain those and make them viable, I suppose not only will it encourage more young people to take up farming, it'll get more young people into the rural communities. So I suppose there's more widespread policy consequences, if we want to put it that way, of supporting our smaller farmers. And I think I think from my perspective as a small farmer and speaking to the small farmers around, that's the vibe that we get off them as well. And I suppose we relate to that and we want to get on board with that. So I'd say that's probably why Fianna Fáil is popular with the smaller farmers.
Okay, and you're a small farmer yourself, but you said your parents weren't involved with Fianna Fáil. Do you mind talking about their political thoughts and how you kind of got involved with Fianna Fáil?
Yes, so I suppose I'd always had an interest in politics. And I suppose one person I really admired was the late Brian Lenehan Jr. And I suppose I remember listening on budget days to him giving what were tough budgets during the recession. And I suppose at that stage I was about 14 or 15, I was thinking to myself, like, Jesus, you know, he's got a tough job and people are giving him a hard time. And you knew by him, you know, that he was doing the best that he could, especially to look after the people that needed him most. And I always felt it was a bit unfair, some of the commentary about him, because, you know, he was doing everything that he could to help the people that were less well off in what was a very difficult economic time. And I suppose that was sort of where I started getting interested in Fianna Fáil and started looking more into Fianna Fáil. Now, in saying that, I looked at all the other parties as well. But really, for me, Fianna Fáil was the one that just struck a chord, in that I just felt with them, they were the party that wants to look after the people that often felt like they were being left behind. And I suppose it comes back to what I was saying about the smaller farmers, that it was Fianna Fáil were there to help the people less well off. And the more I looked into it, the more I found in history that was Fianna Fáil's perspective, and that was their motive in a lot of things. And I suppose I have a keen interest in education. You know, I'm a geography teacher, and even growing up, something I always wanted to do was be a teacher and education. I would have had a keen interest in education policy, and Fianna Fáil's record in education is second to none. You know, you think of Donal O'Malley back in the 1960s and 70s, bringing in free second level education. And I felt, you know, Fianna Fáil had a very strong track record in the things that I cared about, notwithstanding the whole Republican aspect of things, which I also agreed with, being a 32-county Republican, and the way that Fianna Fáil always approached that by trying to do it in peaceful means, bringing everybody together to get, I suppose, a collective agreement on everything, and that everything was done on a consensus basis. They were the main reasons that brought me to Fianna Fáil. Like I said, in the family, no one was really political at all. I suppose they always went out and they voted. I never asked them how they voted. But no one ever had an overly big interest in politics till I started getting involved, which was back in 2011, just after I turned 16, which I suppose wasn't exactly the most popular time to be in Fianna Fáil. But, you know, they were the party that I could relate to most. And look at, I suppose I'm still here 9 years later now, Jesus. So obviously something has kept me coming back as well.
Yeah. You mentioned there, big farms, small farms. This is something that I've discussed with one of my friends, Connor. He's very much against, and I know he's not alone in this, he's very much against CAP. And he believes that we're subsidizing these small, inefficient farms. And he believes it's unproductive and it's costing everyone else money. He believes it should be profitable big farms. Yourself, as a small farm, well, I don't know, it might be a big farm, I don't know, haven't seen your farm. Can you speak to those kind of people who are listening who would think that, you know, we shouldn't be subsidizing this kind of, it's almost a livelihood more than a economic production type thing. It's not a job, it's a way of life. Can you speak to that? Like, is it the importance of these small farms?
So I think looking at CAP as purely a way of subsidizing a lifestyle is looking at very narrowly. What CAP's intention was when it was set out was that we would be able to provide food at a cost-effective way for a very growing world and a growing population. And that's still true now. You know, we're still way behind in, you know, the food demand is still outweighing food supply. And we have a long way to go, particularly with the 2050 targets. But I think if you look at what value you're getting for your CAP payment, you know, going to any farmer, but we'll say small farmers particularly because they're the most populous, particularly in rural areas, it makes a farm viable. There's no point saying that it doesn't. Now, you're not going to meet any farmer that will say that they want to be relying on CAP, because they absolutely don't. They want to be making their way as well. But it helps them, first of all, produce food at a cost that is attractive to consumers. It also goes right back into the local economy. So in my experience, farmers pretty much spend everything they get in their local areas, be that the local co-op, the local grocery stores, and maybe, you know, I might be, people might think I'm living in the 1980s by saying things like that. But, you know, even from my own perspective, everything that I buy for the farm is got out of the local co-op about 5 minutes down the road. Any shopping I get, anything like that, is all got in the local shops as well. So it's as much an investment in the local area as it is money for the farmers, or as people would say, a subsidized way of living. So I think we have to look at the broad impacts that CAP is having. And I think in Ireland, where we're seeing a huge brain drain from rural areas into the urban areas and a huge desire from people to want to go back into their rural areas to where they came from, making farming attractive for them, producing food, supporting rural economies, I think CAP goes a very long way in doing that. Now, I can see the point that people talk about efficiency in big farms, but that's making an assumption that small farms are inefficient. Now, any of the small farmers that I know, and I know sometimes people stereotype them as being old bachelors driving around in a Jeep and, you know, just buying their few cattle and that's it. It's far from that. I would say of all the farmers that are around me here, we all do soil testing every year to make sure that the fertilizer we're going out is sufficient. We are constantly, you know, in contact with Chagas advisors and all the up-to-date advice in terms of making farms as efficient as possible. We just happen to be doing it on a smaller scale than what people would say are the bigger farmers. So I suppose that's my perspective on CAP and the smaller farmers. I certainly see it as a worthwhile investment. Yes, there probably does need to be some improvements made, but I think we have to look at CAP in the broader context of what it's providing to the areas. And, you know, I don't think we can classify it as just subsidizing a way of life.
Okay. Do you think there would be more efficient ways to subsidize the, just promote, you mentioned the brain drain. Do you think there are other ways that we can, you know, keep our rural communities alive? And if so, what would they be?
So someone that I always have great time for is Eamon O'Queeve. And in 2017, I had him at a policy event in Roscommon. And we talked specifically about this, about our rural areas and how we can keep them alive. And what he says, and, you know, if you go and you look into it, what you find is the vast majority of people living in cities want to move out of cities because, you know, the competition for housing in cities is far too great. You have huge issues with commuting, with traffic. And yes, to be fair, there's a lot of antisocial activity that goes on as well, and other factors. So what you find is people want to live in rural areas, but particularly for the last 9 years, there's been a huge issue with getting planning permission for people in the rural areas, and there's been a whole load of red tape applied to it. My understanding is that still exists, but I know that the new government are starting to work on that. You know, it's not that we don't get people don't want to live in the rural area, it's that they haven't been given the opportunity to do so. And as an aside to that, or I suppose in parallel to that, a lot of people want to set up businesses in rural areas, but the policy of government in the last 9 years in particular has been that you have to set up in an urban area, not necessarily a city, but a town as well. Now I can understand that that's because of the access to the services like your electricity, your water, your broadband, but particularly around where I am, because I do come from a rural area, there are a lot of businesses and a lot of manufacturers who, you know, set up in the middle of a field, in the middle of nowhere, and have thriving businesses. You know, there's a stove company just over the road from me who are one of the best retailers in Ireland. They're in the middle of nowhere. So my attitude to it is, if someone can set up a business and make it profitable, no matter where they think they can do that, let them do it. There's no reason we should be confining people to towns and cities, because all that's doing is it's bringing more jobs into the towns and cities, and it's taking people out of the rural areas. And so if our strategy is, let's support the rural areas, then it has to be from a broader perspective of, let's put jobs in the rural areas, let's let people live in the rural areas, and then we can start seeing our rural areas thrive, and we can start seeing a lot more balanced region development.
Yeah, that would be great. So it might help us go some way to stopping our housing crisis. I'd be interested to see, because I asked some people what they wanted me to ask you, and there's two topics. There's unification of Ireland, which always comes up, and there was housing. The government just announced in the recent budget, I think, is it 2 billion or 5 billion? You can correct me on this. Is it 5 billion for housing? You tell me what now. Can you explain to me?
I don't know what the accurate figure is. I think it's something like 2 billion extra or something like that, and then the overall budget. But I know it's the biggest budget in the history of the state. I didn't actually catch the end of your question.
I was just saying, could you explain to us the new in the budget, in the new housing budget, what how will that go towards tackling the housing crisis?
So I suppose the Fianna Fáil thing over the last number of years, and Dara O'Brien in particular, who has just been out in front on the housing issue, if we need more houses. You know, there's no point going trying to tackle a housing crisis without building more houses. And the strategy from government has been to build more houses, be they private houses, affordable accommodation, or social accommodation. So my understanding of the strategy and the funding that was announced in the budget is that it was to increase our stock of housing, because, you know, that's what we need to fix the problem, is we need more houses. And look at the private sector, obviously is experiencing a lower level of output than it would have been a few years ago. And so that does need to be supplemented by government investment. And we're starting to see that now over the last couple of months. So, you know, I would be hopeful that we are on course now to start seeing the number of people in emergency accommodation, the number of homeless people, that we start getting them into houses, and that, you know, we get them into houses that are affordable for people to live in.
Yeah. Is there anything in particular that excites you about the new budget?
I suppose it's one of those budgets, isn't it, where it's been set in the context of two very big and two very dominant issues that are COVID-19 and Brexit. I suppose one thing I've gone along with Fianna Fáil and agreed with over the last couple of years is that we needed to invest in our public services. And we saw it in the budget. You had Fianna Fáil fingerprints all over it, where there's huge investment that has been done in areas that have been neglected for years. It's after going on my head now.
Grand.
I had the list of things I was going to mention, and now they're after going.
Mental health, is that one of them?
Yeah, there was three or four things that I had just as I was talking, I was thinking of. Will I start the answer again or something? I don't know.
We can cut this all out. It's not live.
Yeah.
You can take this all out. So is there anything? do you have a list? Do you want to take like 5 minutes?
I know, I suppose mental health is probably the big one. And then you've got a lot of the cycling infrastructure. Then again, of course, that's really only, that was more of a continuous thing than just the budget. Obviously housing, there's been investment in housing, investment in health. But I mean, if we start getting into that rabbit hole, we're never going to get out of it. I suppose they're the main ones, really. I think mental health is probably the main one for young people in particular. That services are just not there. And we need to see the proper investment. It's not just about lumping money into mental health services. It's about targeting the money to where it's needed. And, you know, if we want to talk about young people's mental health, then it needs to go into providing services in localized areas for young people. Because we see, particularly over lockdown, huge increases in the number of people contacting Jigsaw, for example. But there's a capacity that all of these places have. And beyond that, you know, what happens to everybody else then that doesn't get their place? So we need to target our investment to bring the services to the people that need it. And I suppose one thing that we put forward in the budget last year was to pilot a scheme for child psychologists. I think it was, we had a cost of about 11 million for the year to basically subsidize psychologists to go into youth clubs, sports clubs, and to be available on a weekly basis, maybe one or two days a week, and to be there for young people if they're having an issue to just go into. Because obviously there's issues with waiting lists for mental health services as well, and that's going to have to be tackled. But the fact that we've started seeing proper significant investment in mental health means that we're getting somewhere. It means that the start has been made and that we are going to see hopefully continuous investment in mental health. And I think the fact that we've got a designated junior minister, I don't even know if we had one for the last 9 years. None of them steps out. I know now obviously Mary Butler is, and she's been doing a lot of very good work in that aspect of targeting investment and working with the stakeholders. Because like I said, there's no point in us just throwing money at this and saying, you know, go fix the problems. It's got to be targeted, and there's got to be a proper strategy put in place to bring the services to the people that need them and to make people aware that the services are not there. You know, we've been doing a lot of good work in the last couple of years to try and destigmatize issues around mental health and to get people to be more open about it. And yes, we're seeing some success. That obviously needs to continue. But that now needs to be matched with the services for the people that are coming forward with the mental health issues.
Yeah.
Sorry, I went on a bit of a...
No, you didn't. That's the whole point of the podcast, long form discussion. You know, people want to get to know you. You're the Uachtaráin of Fianna Fáil Ógra. What made you run for that? What made you go for Uachtaráin?
Oh, that's a good question. I wonder that sometimes myself these days. probably shouldn't put that in. any time I've ever ran for something, I've always gone in with a purpose. I've always seen space to make improvements, to make things a little bit better. I suppose when I ran for Uachtaráin 12 months ago, we hadn't an awful lot of units on the ground. I can't remember the exact number now, but I was going through it. But it's about a third of what we've got now. And I wanted to put a real focus on getting active our local units. I read a very good book a few years ago by Noel Whelan about Fianna Fáil. And something that he wrote about always resonated with me, and it was the Fianna Fáil philosophy for years, is that, and I suppose it's become a cliche now, all politics is local. And they were talking about Eamon de Valera setting up Cummins in literally every town and village in the country to build a network. Because if you've got a strong network, you're going to have good feedback coming in. So you're going to know what the issues on the ground are. You're going to know what issues you need to tackle. And you're also going to get ideas from people how to tackle the issue. And so I suppose I took the perspective that Ógra could do the same thing. So if you go into each CDC or you go into each council district, if you want to look at the six counties, or you go into each college, if we had a unit in every one of those, we're going to have a really good grasp of what the issues are there. We can have great feedback coming up to us, and we'll have really good engagement going both ways to try and actually put forward solutions to those issues. I think that's what Ógra was always very strong at, was coming out fighting on the issues that affected young people. Now, it doesn't mean we have to go making fancy graphics and fancy statements every time something comes up. The fact now that we have ministers and government means we can actually, give them an email, or we can actually call them up, because most of us know them personally, and discuss these things and put our issues on their agenda. And I think we've had some very good success with that. So I suppose that was my main focus in running, was to actually grow the network and to make it strong and sustainable. Because I've seen for years where we go in this cycle of, we'd have a couple, maybe a year or two where we're really strong, and then a year or two where it all seems to fall off. And I wanted to come in and try and stop that and set in place the groundwork whereby the structures are now in place so that it's now foolproof, so that no matter what happens, it's always going to be strong. Your unit is always going to be active. There's always going to be stuff happening. Obviously, the year that has transpired with a general election 2 months into our term and then a pandemic a few weeks later meant that a lot of the stuff that the officer board obviously wanted to do, we were unable to do. So we obviously had to adapt very quickly and move things online. But I actually think one of the few good things to come out of the pandemic is probably Zoom. And probably at this stage, we may be all Zoomed out, but it's opened up an awful lot of speakers in particular to us. And with that, an awful lot of expertise and an awful lot of engagement. I suppose, you know, we ran the series with George, our events officer, back in May and June of the weekly events with the, I suppose, what were then our spokespeople, now a lot of them are ministers. And it was just an opportunity for our members to talk with them about issues and get their feedback, to give them feedback and open a dialogue. And it's events like that that our members always craved and that we always wanted to facilitate. Wasn't always easy to do because you had to try and coordinate their schedule with Ogre's schedule. It's become a lot easier now with Zoom because they can literally log on for an hour from the comfort of their home or their office as part of the day, and there's no travel time to and from. And obviously for our members as well, it's the same. They can come in after a day of work, school, college, whatever, and they can sit down, and for a lot of them, they can just relax and listen to the conversation that's had, and if they have a question, do it that way. So I think that's probably one of the blessings, and that's one of the ways that we've adapted to the new situation that I hope won't go on for very much longer. Because I do think we miss the social side of politics. You do have to have the balance. And obviously when restrictions were eased slightly there a few weeks ago, some people in local areas had the opportunity to actually meet up with each other, have some of their AGMs, events, and stuff. And I think it's just good for us that we are able to socialize. And I think it's something that we're all really missing. Something I suppose us as the central office would have just had to power through and try and make easier for everybody. We hold every Friday night, there's quizzes on. Obviously, it's no substitution for being able to sit around the table and just having a crack with people. But it is an outlet for people and it is an opportunity to just socialize. I think we've adapted well to the COVID situation. If you were to ask me 12 months ago, you know, there's an impending global pandemic. It's probably going to stop all of your plans. Are you still going to run fruits or on? I probably still would have said yes, because I think there's an awful lot of good work that we can still do without having to constantly meet up with each other. And I think technology has given us the option to do that. And COVID, I suppose, has given us the opportunity to properly look at the technology.
Yeah. Now you mentioned, well, first I'll say, I think that book from Noel Whelan is The History of Fianna Fáil.
Yes,
is that the one you're talking
about?
Yeah. You're talking about technology, and obviously you mentioned Zoom and all that's so important. Social media is a huge part of what Ogre does. I have some stats here. I was just doing a bit of research first. Sinn Féin, they have 250,000 likes on Facebook. Fianna Fáil only have 40,000. Their Ogre have 40,000 likes, and Fianna Fáil's Ogre have 5,000. Sinn Féin, they post, their Fianna Fáil Ogre posts once a day, Sinn Féin Ogre posts about 4 times a day. Sinn Féin themselves post 5 times a day, and Fianna Fáil posts about 3 times a day. So you obviously have a bit of catching up to do. Obviously, it's all been thrown up in the air with the pandemic and, you know, the general election, which was a bit of a shock. What does Fianna Fáil Ogre need to do next year to catch up with Sinn Féin? Is it just more money? Do we need to do more fundraising? Obviously, we're not as rich as Sinn Féin, but what do we need to do?
So I suppose the first point to address in relation to the amount of posts that everyone is putting out, we've always gone for quality over sheer quantity. Because, I mean, look, we could throw out 4 or 5 posts a day as well if we wanted. and they could get whatever number of likes. But, you know, we actually sit down and we think about our strategy and we think about, well, what message are we conveying today, or what issues are up today that we can talk about or that we can highlight. Obviously, with the minute with recruitment coming on board, we're posting every day about the reasons why people should join OGRA. But I would maybe go away from the idea that the more you post, the more you're going to get. Obviously, look at that with algorithms and stuff. People, you'll show up on people's timelines more often, which probably makes them more likely to follow your page. But at the same time, if you're going to just annoy people and spam their feeds with stuff that, you know, I know from my perspective, to turn me off entirely. But I think we have to be smart about it, and I think we have to be targeted in the way that we're doing it. And I don't think it's an understatement to say that in the last 12 months, the OGRA social media has been effectively revolutionized. You know, we've brought back a full-time press officer. We've brought Dara Jane on board, who, you know, it's her day job to work in PR and event promotion. And I think that was a really good appointment, and I'm so glad that she applied for it. But I suppose the first thing I did is sit down with her, and we set out a very clear strategy for it. We set out a new brand for OGRA, because if you look back pre-November last year, we were bouncing from one typographic to the next. There was no consistency into it. And it was something that I never thought about until she, I suppose, really sat down and said, you know, this is what's going to make your social media good. Now, obviously, you've got to have the content to back that up. And I think in OGRA, you've got the content. I think we appeal to a lot of people in what it is we're promoting. It is fair to say that we're really only at the start of the strategy. And even now, as we move into the likes of podcasts, we move into more video style formats. We're trying things out as they come, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't. So we really are only at the start of the process. But I suppose that's now why the position of press officer is permanent on the central officer board, so that there will be a consistency going forward and something we can work on. You know, if you're asking me what it is they need to do next year to improve this, I would say is to be consistent with what has been done now. That we can't, you know, whenever the next NYC comes and a new press officer and a new COB comes in, we can't just press the reset button and say, well, let's just start again and build ourselves up again. It has to be a continuous thing. And I think how we hand, particularly on social media, how we hand over from this COB to the next one will probably be very critical, so that we can have a continuation of that and that we can continue to build. And I don't have the figures with, or the figures to hand, of what we were 12 months ago in terms of likes and follows to where we are now. I know it has improved immensely, particularly on Instagram, which was only rebooted about 12 months ago. We've absolutely boomed on that. But I think consistency is the key, and sending out a message that is resonating with people, and that the quality of the content isn't being compromised just to try and get ourselves on a couple of more feeds.
You mentioned there getting a message to resonate with people. Fianna Fáil, some people have said that Fianna Fáil, we kind of stand for everything now. What is our message, or what should it be that would resonate with people?
Well, I suppose the message from Fianna Fáil that always resonated with me is that I always felt and believed that they had my back. So, you know, I don't see myself being represented by any other political party, or I don't see how another political party would represent someone like me, who's probably at the working class, you know, going to work every day, farming, getting by. I always felt that Fianna Fáil looked after me. And I understand where people say Fianna Fáil stands for everything at the same time. And as far as Eamon de Valera said many, many moons ago, he doesn't believe in a left wing or a right wing, and that it's the job of people in politics and politicians and government to look at a problem as it arises and to solve it in the best way for the people that it's affecting. And I think that kind of philosophy is true now for Fianna Fáil. You know, people say, oh, Fianna Fáil is centre-right, or we're in the centre, or we're centre-left. You can classify it whatever way you want. In my view, Fianna Fáil has always been the party that we see a problem and we deal with it in the way that we believe is best for the people of the country. People will always disagree. That's the nature of politics. But I, at the moment in time, I'd be quite happy that we are sending out a message that, and not to use the cliche, we are representing an Ireland for all. And that, you know, in a Fianna Fáil led government in our in the country that we're leading, you can know that your interests and the issues that you face are going to be solved in the best way possible for you.
That's interesting. People struggle to differentiate between Fianna Fáil and Fianna Gael. You mentioned an Ireland for All. I couldn't tell you what Fianna Gael's slogan is, to be honest. They're doing worse than Fianna Fáil and on the social media. How can Fianna Fáil differentiate themselves to young people who would be similar to me and would struggle to differentiate between the two?
Yeah, I suppose there has been this perspective that there's little difference between them. For me, Fianna Fáil has always prioritised public spending and investing in community. I never got that from Fine Gael. You know, and not to go back over the last 9 years again, but like our public sector, our health service, our housing sector were being effectively starved of funding, starved of investment. And that wasn't happening with Fianna Fáil. Now, look, there was obviously shortfalls in places at times, but I always felt, and I think the record will speak to this, Fianna Fáil always prioritised public services, investment in public services, and they always prioritised helping out the people that needed the help, you know? And that would be something that, as I said, got me involved with Fianna Fáil first, is that I felt that they were trying to represent the people that were getting it hard to get by. I'm not sure, has it been an issue of communication from the party over the last couple of years that message has been lost or what it is that has happened? But you go around, you talk to any Fianna Fáil TD, councillor, senator, whoever it may be, they'll tell you the same thing, that they're there to represent the ordinary people of Ireland who really feel as if they need a break and they want to give them the break. As I said, the communication of that message may be where our issue has been. But if you compare Fianna Fáil with Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil has always invested in public services, always invested in community, and invested in the people. I didn't see that from Fine Gael.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And they, I think Fine Gael, the reason we've had this housing crisis and it's gotten so bad is because they never invested in public housing. They wanted the private sector to work its magic. And
absolutely.
Exactly. Look what we have now. Yet at the same time, Fine Gael are topping the polls. They're, according to the latest Irish Times, what are they at, 35%? Varadkar's at 65%, where Mary Lou's at 46%, and Micheál Martin is at 39%. Fine Gael is at 35%, Sinn Féin's 29%, Fianna Fáil are 17%. The last time we were this low, well, besides a couple of weeks ago, we were at 10%, I think. But the last time we were this low was in 2011. My question for you, Tom, is what can Ogre do? What can Ogre do to bring Fianna Fáil back and get them to at least 30%, which is what would be the minimum required to lead the next government? What can we in Ogre do?
So I suppose the one thing that we've set ourselves out to do is to help with communicating the party message. And I mentioned that there seems to have been issues with communicating the party message for whatever reason. There's no point in us now sitting around in a circle crying about what could have been over the last couple of years and the issues we made. We need to see, right, this is where the problem was, let's go and fix it now. And I think we've had a really can-do attitude from Ogre over the last couple of months, particularly since we got into government, in that we want to help, we're here to help, and we're going to do what we can to help you. In fairness, we have seen in the last couple of weeks in particular improvements being made on the social media side of things, on the communication side of things from the party. And you know, not that we're going to take credit for it, but you know, we sat down as late back as February, putting together recommendations for the party in how to improve that. And I think that's an area that maybe wasn't used enough by Ogre over the last couple of years, that we focused a lot of time on the bigger policy issues. And while they're important, you know, there was a lot of things going on internally that we probably could have been tackling as well. Now we're doing it now and we're able to raise a lot of issues. But I think for Ogre, what we can do is like we can buy into what the party is selling. We're all members of Fianna Fáil. And the fact that we're still members of Fianna Fáil means we're here for a reason. Now some people might know what that reason is, but if they dig deep down, they will find it. And I imagine it's not too different for the reasons that I'm a member. We all have to pull together because, you know, we can look at polls and we can give out our polls and say, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. Let's just go and do it then. Let's go and sell the message. We've talked about what was a really good budget. And thankfully, we had really good promotion around that. So hopefully that's going to help us. Now, if I want to use, I suppose, the age-old saying of, you know, don't believe everything you say at the polls, is probably quite true as well, because there have been oftentimes polls have been defied. Obviously, when you get a series of polls, you're starting to see a trend. Now, I suppose we saw a couple of weeks ago the poll that saw Fianna Fáil at 10%. Since then, we have actually come up quite a long way. And I think it's because people are, first of all, seeing that the government are doing a lot of good things on the policy side and that they're starting to have an effect. Obviously, the budget now is going to go a long way. The July stimulus did as well. But I also think we're communicating the message better. And I think we have facilitated that, and we've really rode in Ogra in spreading that message. We shouldn't be ashamed to be in Fianna Fáil. We shouldn't be ashamed to promote on our social media or wherever it is that we're in Fianna Fáil. Certainly I'm not anyway. You know, when people bring up things with me and I say, well, actually, you know, this is what we're doing about it and this is what we're doing to do it, or I'll defend a decision. Now, obviously, there'll be things I won't agree with either, but I will say that directly to the party rather than cribbing about it on social media most of the time. Now, sometimes you'll do a campaign to get something changed and you'll do it that way, and you'll also have the conversations. But for the most part, you know, we all have to pull together. And that, I think, is the key thing in this. You know, it benefits our opposition or the other parties when we decide that we're going to have an internal split or we're all going to start fighting with each other. But we're all in Fianna Fáil for the core values that the party sets out. And we can agree and we can disagree about whether this is right or this is wrong. At the end of it all, there's good intention behind the policy, and it's motivated on the founding principles of Fianna Fáil, that it's a Republican policy, even though, you know, some people, particularly Sinn Féin, will say we're not actually Republicans. And that's another issue in itself. But I think we should be proud of the work that the government has done. Now, it has been marred by a couple of things and a couple of incidents over the while. But one thing I always highlight to people is, of everything that's happened so far, I've struggled to find a key policy issue that I have had with the new government and with our ministers. It all seems to be issues of personnel and just silly mistakes that I think seem to have been rectified now. What I'm seeing from the party side is a willingness to work with us to improve in the best interest, not necessarily just of the party, but of the country. I can't remember who said it, but someone said a few years ago that Fianna Fáil in government is an awful lot better than Fianna Fáil out of government. And I think that's true, because I think a Fianna Fáil in government is the best thing for the country. And I think as members of Fianna Fáil, not just Ogra, it should be our job to promote the good work that we're doing, to defend the work that the party is doing, and to promote that with an eye, I suppose, on the next general election.
I'd agree with what you said there, that I can't see how this government has put a foot wrong policy-wise. Obviously, they've made a balls of a few things. There's Golfgate, obviously, among numerous other things. And I say I'm not the only one feeling a bit disheartened and disengaged with Fianna Fáil at the moment. As I mentioned, we're low in the polls. We're, as a student, I haven't been able to go to college yet. I literally have not had a single thing on campus. I haven't been able to, like, when I heard that we're going into another 6-week lockdown, like, I just want to go to Dicey's, man. You know, I just want to go back. I just want my few shares in the local. Yeah, don't we all? So look, I'm going to finish on this. Mr. Uachtaráin, what do you have to say to the young members of Fianna Fáil Ogra who are just feeling like they just want to give up?
What I'll say is I felt the same as you have many times over the years, not just for this particular things will always come up in politics that challenge you and that make you think things. The fact that we're still going means that we've overcome those. There have been a couple of issues with what's happened with this government, and somehow a lot of them have been on the Fianna Fáil side of things. I don't think anybody is going to ever make excuses for what happened with Golfgate, nor should we ever. But I think we have to look past a lot of the more trivial things that are happening and look at the good that we as a party are doing in government. Now, I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I, on behalf of the organisation, oppose going into this coalition, mainly because of our issue with going in with Fine Gael. But I think once that result came in, we had to say, right, it's happened now, let's move on and let's be positive and let's work with what we have. And I think our faith in the party will often be challenged, much as our faith in everything else does. But we should never lose the confidence that our public servants, our TDs, our ministers, our senators, our councillors are doing everything they can for their local areas and for the people they represent. They're giving us, probably for the first time in a very long time, policies that we can actually champion, policies we can be proud of, and policies that we can go out and promote to young people. You know, you talk about issues with college at the moment and not being on campus. It's very tough. You know, as I said, I'm here in the middle of nowhere. I hardly get to see people except when I go out and about. It's tough being in social isolation. I feel, I can't even describe how disappointed I am for the new first years this year who can't go and have the college experience that all of us had. It's tough. What I'll say is we're all in it together. We all feel it. No one is, you know, no one is loving the fact that everyone is miserable, because we all feel it. We all have made sacrifices in different ways. The Taoiseach himself said it a while back. You know, he didn't even have his family when he was appointed Taoiseach. And I know that's a very small thing in the larger context of what's happened in COVID. But for him and his family, it was a very proud day and they couldn't be there. You know, he, like everybody else, wants to go out and have a pint with their friends because we all are we are sociable people. We like to socialize with each other. But we've got to just stick with it together, and we've got to do everything we can to get through this. And particularly now that we are in a very long lockdown, we have to be there for each other. We have to support each other. It's going to be trying times for a lot of people. What I would say is never be afraid to pick up the phone and ring someone. Now, obviously it's no substitute for being able to go and sit around a table with someone, but there's always going to be someone at the end of the phone to talk to just have the crack. You know, it may not be no substitute for what we're missing. But we're still connected as much as we ever were through the medium now of technology. I would say, look, with the party, keep the faith, push the positives. Let's work on the things that need work on. And when it comes to COVID, let's work together to make sure that we can actually beat the virus, that we can save lives, that we save livelihood, and that we can support each other as we go forward for whatever else gets thrown at us.
And that is the end of our second ever podcast, this one with Tom O'Cahill. If you enjoyed it, please leave a rating. It would really, really help us. And if you could reach out to me personally at O'BrienH9@tcd.ie if you have any idea how we could improve this podcast for you personally. And with that, we'll end it. So thanks for listening, and I hope you have a good life.